Welcome to Logical, the first regular podcast navigating legal processes in the UAE. I'm Tim Elliott, and I'm here with the managing partner of the Dubai-based legal firm HPL Yamalova and Plethka, Ludmilla Yamalova, is our expert as ever. Good to see you, Ludmilla.
Good to see you too, Tim. Thanks for being here as always.
Now, in this episode, we're going to discuss how tenants in Dubai can claim a refund of their rental deposit, particularly in the case of a dispute with a landlord. Now, once again, we'll try and break it down into a Q&A format so that it's super easy to follow. And to begin with, Ludmilla, what should a tenant do if a landlord refuses to refund the rental deposit?
In short, if the landlord refuses to refund the rental deposit, the only legitimate and effective option that tenants have is to seek refund of their deposit through filing a case with RDC, which is the Rental Dispute Center in Dubai, that is. And this applies if the landlord refuses to refund the deposit altogether in full or refund in a timely manner.
So why is this an important issue for tenants, Ludmilla?
Well, it is an important issue because rental deposits often represent a significant amount of money for tenants, and disputes over these funds can cause financial stress and disrupt the tenant's ability to secure new housing. Also, having a clear process to claim refund helps protect tenants' rights and ensure fair treatment. And while it is a significant amount of money for a lot of these tenants, in practical terms, it's not perhaps significant enough, or at least that was the belief previously from the landlord's standpoint, but even from the tenants, that it was significant enough for them to actually file a court case. Perhaps because of that, the practice has developed where in many cases, landlords just don't refund. They don't refund either because they feel that they should not refund because the property was not left in the proper conditions or in the conditions that the landlord expected, or because they never plan to refund altogether. That also often happens. Or because they just don't want a refund, because let's say they're upset with a tenant, or they don't want to refund because they think they can, meaning that who is going to take them to what can the tenants do in the event their deposit is not refunded? Well, are they going to actually apply for a court case to claim their deposit? So in many cases, the deposits can be 5,000 dirhams. 5,000 dirhams for a lot of people is a lot of money, but is it enough to actually file a court case to try to claim it back? So that was kind of the belief, and that was the practice before. And I would offer that perhaps is one of the main reasons why so many landlords just refuse to refund. Why there are so many disgruntled tenants is because historically, while it's a lot of money for tenants, it's not enough money perhaps to kind of go through a formal court process to try to claim the deposit. So that's why it's an important topic to discuss and to share a roadmap of how tenants can legitimately file for a deposit a refund of their deposit and do so kind of within their own means.
Ludmilla, when and on what basis can landlords challenge the refund of a deposit?
So there are a number of grounds and perhaps reasons. Some of them include claiming that the tenant caused damage to the property, and then others alleging that the tenant left the property in an unclean condition, so damaged or unclean. Or disputing unpaid rent or utility bills, or citing breach of lease terms. So understanding these reasons can also help tenants prepare their case when seeking a refund. So let's say the landlord can argue, well, there was in the contract, it was clear that the property was non-smoking or no pets allowed and you had pets or you had smoking. So that's a breach of an agreement. So therefore, we're not going to refund you the deposit because you have breached an agreement. These are some of the reasons. And another reason, and unfortunately we see it all too often, is because they think they should not refund because, they've sort of, in the way the UAE, the deposits work, as most people would know, is that when the landlord receives a deposit, they actually receive cash, right, or the equivalent of cash. So if they receive a check, it's a check that's depositable at that point in time. And so landlords go and deposit it. So it's money basically already used up. So it's not that it's just a guaranteed check that sits with them. It's actually that it's cash or the equivalent of cash, that's a check that's cashable and that is cashed. So in a lot of landlords' minds, they're like, well, that's money already spent. So they don't really feel like it's money that should be refunded. So there's that kind of psychological reason. And then in many cases, they think that, well, you know, they're upset because the tenants, let's say, moved out earlier than they wanted to, or because they made their life, you know, for the eviction process more difficult than they wanted. So it's kind of punitive in nature. Mm. And the last one is that they think they can, you know, just okay, they want to call the tenant to task. And well, if you want to challenge me and get the deposit back, well, so do it, go to court kind of a thing. So they think that a lot of tenants will not stand up and fight for their rights.
I mean, it's fair to say, though, isn't it, that not all landlords try to illegitimately keep deposits?
For sure. I mean, landlords can challenge the refund of a deposit if they believe that they have legitimate grounds, and there's plenty of legitimate grounds. For example, there's documented evidence of property damage beyond the normal wear and tear. That certainly is a legitimate ground. And there is, for example, photographic or written proof that the property was not left in the agreed upon condition. And there could be records of unpaid or rent, outstanding utility bills. There could be proof of lease term violations by the tenant and sort of evidence to show that these violations took place. So these are all the legitimate grounds. But I have to tell you that from experience, we haven't seen that many cases where landlords are able to, for example, prove that the property was left in the state that's beyond the normal wear and tear. And that's because the initial handover of property process wasn't properly documented. So in order for the landlord to prove that the property was damaged beyond the normal wear and tear, there has to be some kind of a benchmark, the initial benchmark to show that the property was rented out and handed over in a certain state, and that whenever the tenant was leaving the property, compared the state of the property compared from the initial report to their final report could be evidenced by the difference in the property documentation, in the property, the pictures of the property, for example. But in order to do that, you need to have that kind of initial baseline, and in most cases that baseline does not exist. So just for the landlord, and by the way, it's important to highlight that for the landlord to claim that I'm not going to give the deposit because the property it looks used, that's not a legitimate ground, because obviously whenever you rent a property, the normal wear and tear is to be expected. You don't expect somebody to live for 3-5 years in your property and to give you the property in the identical condition when they moved in. So there will be usual wear and tear. So in order to claim retention of the deposit, there has to be actual legitimate damage to the property beyond the normal wear and tear. And to show that, you need to have that sort of baseline to compare how the property was left and how it was handed over. So in most cases, we see that there's kind of that initial baseline is just not there. There's evidence to document specifically how the property was rented out. And that usually is the best way to do it is through photographic means, right? So if you take photos, for example, things that get damaged most, for example, appliances, right? Or we see a lot of cases of damage in the bathrooms, in broken tiles, right? Broken showers. So if there's photographic evidence that exists upon handover, what the showers look like, the bathtub look like, what the tiles look like, what the kitchen appliance look like, or any kind of wooden work, for example, wooden floors. And then it's very easy to later claim the retention of the deposit because there's clear photographic evidence that the property was damaged. But as I said earlier, unfortunately, historically, we have not seen many cases where that first baseline is properly documented to allow landlords to challenge the refund of the deposits at the end of tenancy. So that's the biggest issue we've seen so far, just because the landlord thinks that the property was not left in a clean enough state. That's not a valid legal grounds for them to not refund the deposit, unless, for example, unless in the contract it clearly states that this deposit is not going to be refunded, because the landlord will use that money to paint and repaint and sort of and freshen up the property. So if the parties agree to something like that ahead of time and for the deposit to be applied for something like this, then it takes away the responsibility from the landlord, for example, from the tenant, that is, to paint the property, because the parties agree in advance that it will be the landlord who will use the deposit to later repaint the property and freshen it up before renting it out to somebody else.
Ludmilla, what's the process for filing a request with the RDC?
So in cases of disputes between tenants and landlords, tenants should file a request with the RDC, and that is the Rental Dispute Center in Dubai, for what is called a payment writ. This can be found under the new case tab on the RDC online portal. So the specific request is the payment writ request. So it's not just you're not filing a substantive case. You're filing an administrative request using the rental court portal and rental court services. But it's not your full-blown typical case that will go into the merits of the case. It's just a request to RDC. To issue an order to order the landlord to refund the deposit. So that's called a payment writ, and it can be found kind of navigated. The website, the RDC online portal is fairly easy to navigate, and it continues to improve by leaps and bounds. And so there is a service that's called a specific service for and a new case a tab that's called the payment writ. And by the way, much of this is sort of easily kind of navigatable by just an ordinary layman person. So you don't need to have a lawyer to figure out what to, where to find the request and how to file it.
Okay, which leads me to state that it doesn't sound too complicated. Is that fair?
That is fair. So the process is generally easily accessible, simple and efficient. Tenants can file their own cases without the need for legal representation. The RDC online portal is designed to be user-friendly and eliminates the need for physical visits or in-person court hearings. In other words, it's fairly accessible and user-friendly and can be done by laymen, in other words, a non-legal person or person without any legal background. And in fact, that's exactly the reason why this particular request was introduced and in the form that was introduced is to make it accessible to tenants to file these cases on their own and therefore reducing the number of cases of abuse by landlords. Who previously would not have refunded the case, expecting that it was just going to be too expensive and too cumbersome for tenants to bring these cases. So this process, theoretically, was introduced for this very reason, is to allow tenants to kind of do it efficiently and economically, and therefore make it worthwhile for them to pursue refunds of their deposits.
And you can do it in English, can't you, on the website?
Indeed. So as I mentioned earlier, the RDC online portal continues to improve and continues to be user-friendly, more and more so. And one of the services is that but it's an increasing extent, it is also available, a lot of the services are available in English. And in English, that is in terms of kind of navigating the portal and which service to pick. But it's still important to note and kind of remind that anything that's ultimately submitted to RDC, because RDC is a court, has to still be in Arabic. So the submissions, the arguments have to be in Arabic, and that includes any supporting documents, which must be not only in Arabic or translated into Arabic, but also have to be legally translated, if they are not originally in Arabic. In short, it's accessible to non-Arabic speakers in terms of navigating the portal, and it's also accessible in the sense of making the submissions, I guess translating your own submissions. You can draft them in English and you just put them into Google Translate and then submit that translated version of the statement of claim, the Google translated version. But as long as any kind of supporting documents that were originally not in English, for example, email correspondences or contract that are not originally in Arabic, they need to be legally translated. So there is for submissions, and that is the arguments to the court, don't need to have legal translation. You don't need to have a translator with you even during the hearings. You can just do it all through Google Translate. And during the hearings, there'll be either a translator. In all cases, there will be a translator. But what we also see increasingly more is the judges, especially the RDC judges, are starting to even speak in English to the parties representing themselves, especially in these kinds of cases when it's sort of simple. So anything to do in terms of communicating with the court by way of submitting requests and arguments, as well as speaking at the hearing, can just that be done through your kind of the common translation tools. But with regards to the document that are attached as evidence in support of your claims, those documents, if they were not originally in Arabic, do have to be legally translated, and that is with a proper legal stamp.
What's it going to cost me to file a payment writ case?
Yeah, so the payment writ case, because it is it's still a court process that you are you're using to apply to get your your deposit back. So the fee to file a payment writ case has basically the same kind of percentage as in any other case, but it is a percentage of the claimed amount. So it's 3.5% of the claimed amount, with a minimum fee of 500 dirhams and a maximum of 15,000 dirhams. So if your deposit is 5,000 dirhams, the fee is 3.5% of the 5,000 dirhams. But it has to be a minimum of 500 and maximum of 15,000.
How long does it take to get a decision?
Payment writ cases are usually decided within one day, provided that all required documents are submitted. And the required documents usually include, obviously, the lease agreement, and the lease agreement should have a very specific provision about the deposit, maybe a copy of the check or confirmation of the amount of the deposit, and perhaps any kind of correspondence from the landlord refusing to refund the deposit, and evidence from the tenant that they request it and for the deposit to be refunded. And then there'll be the usual documents of the title deed and the landlord's detail, the passport copy, or at least, you know, Emirates ID number, and the documents from the tenant or tenant's identification documents. Once those documents, so that's the full file. So once the full file is submitted, after that, and once the case has been accepted or this request has been accepted, the court usually takes one day to decide.
I guess a lot of people are kind of reticent. They're a little bit hesitant in coming forwards to do this. You know, there's this feeling of, you know, I don't know the process. I don't speak legalese. I don't really understand what I need to do. I haven't got the documents. What steps do you need to take to file a payment writ smoothly, Ludmilla?
So one, visit the RDC online portal. Then navigate to the new case tab and select payment writ. Ensure that all the pleadings and supporting documents are in Arabic or legally translated. Then submit your case online and pay the requested fee, which is 3.5% of the claimed amount, and await the decision, which is typically made within one day.
Let's just conclude. What would you want to just add finally?
So filing a request for a refund of your rental deposit with RDC is straightforward and efficient. And so by following these steps and ensuring that all your documents are in order, you can navigate the process fairly smoothly. So the moral of the story is that tenants should not shy away from standing up for themselves and filing these claims to get their deposits refunded, and that the process is accessible and easy to navigate. And therefore, they should not be deterred to use the tools that are available, because the tools exist to allow tenants to be able to exercise this right on their own without having to pay for legal fees or even legal translators in most cases. So my advice is don't be afraid, don't shy away. If you believe that you are entitled to your deposit, then don't be afraid to stand up for your rights and file a request, because the tools and the courts are there to help tenants address exactly these very disputes economically and in the way that happens quite quickly, allowing you to get your money back so that you can use that money to as a new deposit for a new property.
That's another episode of Logical, claiming a refund of your rental deposit in Dubai. Thank you for listening and or watching if you're with us on YouTube. As always, thank you to our legal expert, managing partner here at Yamalova & Plethka, Ludmila Yamalova. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
Find us at LY Law. Feel free to reach out to us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn. The podcasts are free at lylawyers.com. And to get a legal question answered, either by a qualified UAE experienced legal professional or in an episode of Logical, click on contact at lylawyers.com.